The remote hearing at the Capital Investment Committee for March 22nd is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. It's being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Gelman, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Abaje.
Present.
Abaje present. Representative Berg. Representative Berg. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt, present. Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, present.
Lucero, present. Representative Moran.
Moran, present.
Moran, present. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Pearson, present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. And Representative John.
John present.
John present. Chair, you have a quorum.
A quorum is present. Chair Murphy may have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, March 17th.
I move that the minutes for March 17th be approved as printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 17th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Thursday, March 17th are approved. Members, today we will continue to hear bill presentation on capital projects from underserved communities and organizations. And as is custom, please make sure to note that all bills will be heard on informational basis only with amendments offered for reference only. The first bill up is House File 3918. Please proceed, Representative Hassan.
Only if I can unmute myself, right? Good morning, Mr. Chair. And find my page here. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I first want to thank you for the opportunity to present House File 3918, which is the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative funding. The Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative is a collective of 16 renowned Native American nonprofit organizations in the Twin Cities focused on issues ranging from healthcare to housing, workforce development to childcare. These entities are serve communities that have been, you know, COVID has impacted and the civil unrest has impacted in the last 2 years. And this highlighted the disparities that continue to burden the urban indigenous community. American Indian employment, for example, is down 13.7% since 2019. And the American Indians have had the highest COVID-19 death rates, 100,000 more than any other group in the state. These entities serve low-wealth Minnesotans, mostly in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but also throughout the state from Steele County in the south to Etkin County in the north. In a typical year, they touch the lives, more than 10,000 lives with critical support. With that, Mr. Chair, I have two amazing testifiers who will explain more in details what this ask is and will stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. And for all presenters, you know, when you come up, please note for the committee which requests, whether that's GO bonds or general fund cash. Dr. Hobart, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, my relatives. I'm Dr. Joe Hobart. I serve as the president and CEO of the American Indian OIC. And I'm here representing House File 3918, 18, the Clyde Bellacourt Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative, and I'm joined by my colleague Marissa Cummings, who will be speaking shortly. I want to say thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, for allowing us this opportunity to testify on behalf of this work. And I'd like to offer a woplatank, a great thank you to Representative Hassan for championing this effort on our community's behalf. And I will try my best to be amazing. I think that's maybe setting the bar quite high, but I'm happy to be here. So I'm going to begin by talking about this initiative. We've had the opportunity to visit with many of you, but some we have not. And so I want to set some context as to why we're here, what makes this bill incredibly unique, and why this is such an important time for an investment in these organizations' capital requests. We are seeking general cash. There are no GO bonds requested within this House file number. So to begin, the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative is comprised of 16 Native American organizations who are headquartered in the Twin Cities metropolitan region. But as Representative Hassan adroitly pointed out, we provide services to our client base that is not only in the indigenous community, which as a result of federal policies tend to co-locate with our tribal homelands, outstate Minnesota, as well as then here in the Twin Cities area. But we also provide a wide-ranging services to other additional communities of color that come through our doors seeking assistance. These 16 organizations run the breadth of age provision. We have our youngest clientele are the American Indian Montessori School. These are our pre-K through third grade, all the way up to our elder programming offered at the Native American Community Clinic, the American Indian Family Center, and the Minneapolis American Indian Center. So we have all age groups reflected, receiving services within this collaborative. We also have a full spectrum of services that run the gamut from my organization, American Indian OIC's Workforce Development and Education. We have direct health care and dental care, the Native American Community Clinic. We also have behavioral health. Ms. Cummings' organization provides services to our indigenous women that is in behavioral health, crisis housing, as well as healing journeys. We also have other workforce development areas in St. Paul. And we also have artistic and cultural enterprises, such as the Waukon Tipi Center. So why we have come together in this collaborative, many of us have come to our positions roughly at the same time in leadership. And our organizations, so we're friends, and our organizations also work really well together and have been. We've been in the service of our community for well over 40 years, and we refer our clients to one another. So if they come to seek services in workforce development or education at American NYC, but we have identified through our case management techniques that they may have issues around housing or issues around health, we then refer them to these agencies. What came apparent is that we all own the land that we operate in, and we're operating in buildings that are antiquated, dilapidated, and deteriorating quite rapidly. Case in point, the organization American NYC, we're in a building that dates to World War II. It was a former Yellow Pages and White Pages distribution center, and I have to like take time to explain to our millennial staff what that is, that there are these things called phone books. But our building is quite old, and a credit to our IT and our facility staff who keep that thing running with a lot of grit, spit, baling wire, and duct tape. We have, despite these issues, provided heroic efforts and tremendous results across the board of the 16 organizations. And we know that these results could be amplified as we continue to uplift and onboard our community members into the economy. And it can be amplified by having state-of-the-art facilities that not only can expand these services, but provide the technical assistance and technological updates needed for the 21st century marketplace. We then, as we looked at our needs and these capital assessments, we came to quickly realize we'd all be kind of entering into capital campaigns simultaneously, which means that we would be in direct competition with one another. And this is contrary to our upbringing and our teachings from our elders, that we need to link arms and support one another as a community. And so this journey began in 2019 as a subset that of this, a little smaller than this 16 that we have now, put together a bill that went into session in the 2020 session. And we had good momentum. We had bipartisan support. The bill was dropped in late February of 2020. And then in March of 2020, a funny thing happened along the way, and the pandemic came and kind of shot our plans to pieces. But be that as it may, five of the organizations that were a part of that first collective bill did receive funding. And so when the American Rescue Plan Act was signed into law in March of 2021, we decided to reconstitute this effort, and we added a few organizations that were in the same state of need with their facilities. We learned from what was working with our initial endeavor. We branded ourselves as the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative. And then one of our champions, a person who founded a handful of these organizations, Clyde Bellacourt, began his journey this year. And we really considered it a necessary thing to name this bill after Clyde Bellacourt, a man who devoted his entire life, the co-founder of the American Indian Movement, the founder of the Native American Community Clinic, the founder of American Indian OIC, devoted his efforts to the work to support his community. And to honor his legacy, this is our opportunity to contribute to this living legacy and move this forward. We see the resources that have come pouring into the state from the federal government at historic levels that we haven't seen since FDR and the New Deal. We also see that through fiscal management of the state resources that we do have additional resources through the surplus. And we understand and we are standing amongst other notable projects that are worthy of investment as well. But we believe that this is a critical moment in time to contribute to this legacy, to advance these organizations together in one fell swoop. And I think what makes this unique, because of our interlocatedness and our working together, that this represents a community effort of the community, for the community, and by the community. And this investment not only would have a direct impact in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, but it would have a direct impact outstate as well, as many of our community members receive trainings and then are placed in jobs outstate or vice versa. They come from outstate to receive the trainings here down in the Twin Cities and then join the economy down here. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to my colleague, Ms. Cummings, who will talk a little bit about the needs that we've encountered.
Ms. Cummings, please identify yourself and proceed. You're muted right now.
Sorry about that. Good morning, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and committee members. Marissa Cummings, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. My name is Marissa Miyakonda Cummings, and I'm a citizen of the Umaha Nation and belong to the Buffalo Tail Clan. I am the president and CEO of the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center and also representing the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative. As my colleague, Dr. Joe Hobot, opened with, we are thrilled to be here with you this morning and to share the overview of our united and unprecedented coalition of Indigenous-led and serving nonprofits. I will pick up on a list of the projects where Dr. Hobot left off. Little Earth, built in 1973, remains the only Indigenous preference project-based Section 8 rental assistance community in the United States. It is home to nearly 1,200 residents, 50% of whom are under the age of 21. The community has 38 different tribal nations and affiliations, making it one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the state and the country. The proposed project includes much needed improvements to aging facilities, including the installation of bulletproof glass and new flooring for the youth center, replacement air conditioning and furnace units, and roof repair. The funding will also provide for replacement of two playgrounds currently closed due to unsafe conditions. This request is $1.2 million. The Lower Phelan Creek Project is a Native-led Eastside St. Paul environmental conservation nonprofit. Founded in 1997 by community activists, this project stretches from Lake Phelan to the Mississippi River and throughout the Eastside River District. The proposed 9,000 square foot Wakan Tipi Center, to be located in the Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary, will feature a reception area, classrooms, permanent and temporary exhibit space, a community gathering area, Indigenous teaching gardens, and a gallery to showcase and expand the value of the sanctuary. This request is $1.4 million. Megazi is an American Indian youth organization that provides a strong circle of support that nurtures the educational, social, economic, and cultural development of American Indian youth. In May of 2020, the civil uprising on Lake Street destroyed Megazi's newly renovated building located at 3017 27th Avenue near the 3rd Precinct in South Minneapolis. forcing the organization to find temporary housing while it searched for new space. In January of 2021, it bought a building at 81845 East Lake Street, and now is seeking funding to construct, renovate, furnish, and equip its new home. The building, which needs structural steel fortification, will include a large gathering, learning space, teen tech, media, radio, recording studio, and a commercial kitchen. Capitalizing on the opportunity to build green, the space will have geothermal heating and cooling systems and solar arrays. This request is $4.4 million. The Minneapolis American Indian Center is a community center in the heart of the American Indian community of Minneapolis. It is one of the oldest Indian centers in the country, founded in 1975. The Indian Center provides educational and social services to more than 10,000 members of the community annually, preserving and supporting American Indian cultural traditions through art, youth, and intergenerational programs. The Indian Center serves people in all 11 tribal nations that share a boundary with the state of Minnesota, as well as the urban community. At a total cost of approximately $30 million, this project will restore, preserve, and expand the existing community center. This request is $5 million. The Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center is a nonprofit social and mental health services organization committed to the traditional ways of being and support of American Indian women and their families. Founded in 1984, MIWRC provides programs that support and empower American Indian women, ranging from family services to affordable housing to mental health. Its mission is to empower Native women and families to exercise their cultural values with integrity and to achieve sustainable lifeways while advocating for justice and equity. The proposed $4 million project will allow MIWRC to transform the existing 14 permanent low-income housing units into 22 housing units that are service-intensive and will provide wraparound social and mental health services to support the tenants. This request is $4 million. The Native American Community Clinic opened in 2003 to address the health disparities experienced by the urban Native American community of the Twin Cities. The clinic offers a full range of healthcare services, including mental, behavioral health, dental, and substance abuse programs, as well as medical care, as well as traditional healing. The project is for a new clinic and will expand NAC services to include affordable housing. Though Native Americans make up less than 2% of Minnesota's population, they comprise 24% of the homelessness population. This greatly affects the health and wellness of our community. This request is $12 million. The COVID-19 pandemic and civil unrest of the past 2 years have elevated the pre-existing disparities that continue to weigh on the urban Indigenous community. There are high levels of need, and as we strive to support our community, we are grappling with aging, capacity-limiting facilities. I would also like to point out that the Phillips neighborhood in Minneapolis has had the highest rate of opioid overdoses in the state, and the community nonprofits are left to shoulder the burden of solutions and care for our community. We have come together to seek $85.5 million in state funding to construct 12 new buildings that will allow us to address disparities by expanding services and creating safe, empowering experiences for those we serve. It's no accident that the term legacy is part of this collaboration. We have planted many seeds and are recommitting to establishing strong root systems in the land of our ancestors while moving forward to transform and grow our community for generations to come. Weibo Hawangale, thank you all for your time today and for your dedication and work on behalf of all of your constituents. This concludes our presentation, and we would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Cummings. Representative Zhang.
I just want to thank Vice Chair Hassan for including the Wakan TP in this bill. I know that the Wakan TP is a good site in my district. They've been asking for funds for the last several years, so I really appreciate your leadership on being inclusive in this work, Vice Chair Hassan.
Representative Erdo. You're muted, Representative Erdo.
There I am. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, and thank you for this very informative presentation. And I would commend you for the presenters for giving the total amount of money requested and the source, cash. Appreciate it if the other presenters would do the same. But that said, the total request of the 85.5 million, I think, is a fairly large chunk of change here. If it all depends, I think, on how the pieces come together, how much cash are we going to actually have available to us? You know, if we have suddenly they decide that $1 billion in cash is what we're going to do, then that doesn't look so daunting here. But what I'm suggesting is that that likely won't happen. And so we're going to have considerably less money to work with in terms of cash. And therefore, I'm suggesting that, I'll address this to Dr. Hobart. Can you prioritize? So I know it's difficult in a situation like this, but I think that we're going to need to know what are the most important projects in terms of your priorities. Can you do that?
Dr. Hobart.
Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, Representative Erdahl, thank you for that question. So we have devised an internal metric that is created around all of the work that has gone into this. So the figure that we have presented to you represents what's left to satiate all of these needs. This internal metric will establish a prioritization list within the collaborative, which elevates those projects that are most shovel-ready and on down to those that are at the starting point. So if a figure is issued, which we hope that there will be a figure issued from the conclusion of this session, we will be able to then sort through that and lift up those prioritized projects to receive the income first. In particular, we have the Minneapolis American Indian Center, the Indigenous Peoples Task Force, the Inda Young Center, and the Waukon Teepee Center, and of course McGizzy, which really would be under construction right now had there wouldn't be these unforeseen cost escalations in the construction prices due to supply chain issues that the pandemic brought aboard. But we have these metrics in place, and we are ready to prioritize going forward. It is a large number, relatively speaking, but when we see the amount of resources coming in, you know, we hold the trust of our community that we would be advocating on their behalf, and so we'd be remiss if we didn't go in and ask for what we needed on behalf of our people. And so it is our hope that we can go ahead and move the needle in this historic moment and do something big and very productive.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Dr. Hobart. You know, I appreciate that. I hope that, you know, through this process, we can be helpful and help to move the needle as well. There are a lot of good projects here, and I appreciate that they're being prioritized because I think that's going to be an important part of how we do this. As you will hear today, there are a lot of requests out there for a lot of cash, so we have to balance this as best we can. And that's what we'll be doing, I'm sure. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing your bill forward. Next up on the agenda is Representative Pinto, House File 3908. Please proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. Pardon me, I'm juggling between a couple committees. So it's so good to be with you. Members, the bill before you is one that would establish an Ethiopian community center. We have members of the Ethiopian community that live throughout the metro and throughout Minnesota. There's a significant concentration of folks who live in a portion of my district. And right now, the members of that community, like members of many other groups that have that live in our state, want to interact with one another, have the chance to celebrate together, and have to support one another. And right now, that work is happening out of a very small office on University Avenue, just a couple of rooms. And the proposal before you is to establish a community center like so many others. This is something that I think could be tremendously exciting for folks in that community and benefiting us throughout the metro and state. I think I'd like to have my testifier, Mr. Yuzma, describe in more detail how the community would use this facility, and then I'll have some comments, some more further comments after him, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Yuzma, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Girma Ismail. Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Gilma Ismail. I am the chair of the building committee for the Ethiopian community in Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Pinto, for sponsoring our bill. We are humbly asking for $2.5 million to purchase and renovate a building which will serve as an Ethiopian community center in the heart of the Twin Cities. The building we plan to purchase is in the Midway area, which is an area that the Ethiopian community is very familiar and that's accessible by various forms of transportation. This center will be a hub for Ethiopians residing in Minnesota. It will help facilitate interactions with Ethiopian Americans and the larger Minnesota community. It will help to pave the way for easier integration into Minnesota. The center will assist the young, the elderly, job seekers, and students. It will be a resource for new Minnesotans to help them to become contributing members in their new community. The new center will help Ethiopian Americans to attain the American dream. Specifically, we will use a space to teach about our language, entertainment, art, and our culture. We will celebrate cultural holidays and special events. The center will serve as a place to gather in times of need. The center will be a place for workforce development trainings, including interviewing skills, resume writing, and job training. We'll use the center to coordinate mentoring programs. We'll facilitate support groups and offer counseling services at the center. We'll help the community to translate important documents at the center. Most importantly, the center will serve as a place to connect with our community and the state at large. Right now, the Ethiopian Community Center is operating out of an 8-foot by 10-foot office. With your support, we could have a true community gathering space for Minnesota's growing Ethiopian community. Thank you for taking the time today to learn about our vision for an Ethiopian Community Center in Minnesota. We look forward to welcoming you all to this center when it's up and running. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, we're willing to answer questions.
Seeing no questions, Representative, quick closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'll just note, we're human beings. We need to be together and interacting with one another. And I've been reflecting on this bill of there's a Czech Slovak hall in my new district lines. I've an Italian American background and our communities gathered together. We know Hmong Minnesotans places to gather and we need to be together. And this allows Ethiopian Minnesotans to have that opportunity to teach young people to have wedding celebrations and to mourn at funerals and to have that opportunity to be a really part of our community. And so I'm really excited about this project and would love to get the committee's support for it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Next up, Representative Vang, House File 4100. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 4100 would appropriate about $2.8 million general cash to CEWA, a nonprofit that primarily serves South Asian immigrants and refugees to acquire, construct, and renovate their facility in Brooklyn Center. So I'll yield my time to my testifier, Raj, who is the executive director, who can go more in depth about the work of their organization.
Ms. Chaudhry, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed. You're muted right now, and so we can't hear you. Ms. Chaudhry, you're still muted.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Please proceed.
Good morning, Representative Foley and members of the committee. My name is Raj Chaudhry, and I'm the Executive Director of SEWA, Asian Indian Family Wellness Program, Seva means to serve in Hindi, to serve an Asian Indian family wellness program. We serve, formed in 2004, we serve the underserved, vulnerable populations of South Asians in Minnesota and Greater Minnesota. The population of South Asian is from the community that we serve are from India, Pakistan, Bhutan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Trinidad, Guyana, Nepal, and the now newly arrived Afghan communities. The Seva programs, we are the only agency with the who are direct service providers for South Asians. There's none, especially in the area where in Brooklyn Center, where we are looking to for the funding for the building. The South Asian, we have many programs, including a 24 crisis line, prevention of domestic violence, health initiatives, seniors, youth programs, and as well as now the refugee resettlement programs in partnership with the DHS. Our community needs a space where we can operate from. I'm going to tell you, especially to members of this community, that who the South Asians are, and I've already established that. Now, the thing is, looking at this community where we provide direct services, including the services that have been underlined, we need a space where we can grow and thrive. The community depends on our help, direct services. In the time of pandemic and also from Asian hate era in 2020 and 2021, Seva was the only service provider in the to the South Asian community in a culturally specific way, quickly pivoting our program to direct services such as hot meal programs and also for attending to the COVID needs of the community. So we like your organization, the committee to hear, look at this organization as a support for us, because we are perceived as a model minority. We have many barriers. While people perceive us, especially the Asian Indians that are 52,000 plus, and the other South Asian communities together, we are a community of 92,000 plus. We're the second largest Asian immigrant and refugee group in this Twin Cities, and we have no space. So we are looking at this committee to approve the under $3 million of funding to renovate, to acquire, and to equip the building. I think I can show the presentation now.
Ms. Chaudhary, we are running short on time, so if you could wrap up and we'll make sure to send the presentation to committee members, please.
Okay, so we have, I have in my presentation added letter of supports. About 10, 12 different organizations have supported us, and also the presentation that outlines very clearly the community that we have engaged and also the building requirements. Thank you so much. I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Ms. Chaudhary. We'll make sure the members receive those documentation. Thank you, Representative Vane. Next on the agenda is Representative Vane, House File 4101. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 4101 appropriates $20 million general bonds to fund the commissioner, to give to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for a grant to the City of Brooklyn Center to support small business and entrepreneurship and other commercial opportunities for Black, Indigenous, and people of color in the Northwest suburbs of Minneapolis. The city may enter into a lease or management agreement for operation of one or more of the economic development hubs. As one of the few cities of the state with a people of color majority and with a history of communities of color being left behind, this bill is intentional in building the BIPOC business community. I have my testifier, Nalima, who's the executive director from ACER, spearheading this effort.
Ms. Satati Munine, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair Lee. Thank you so much, Representative Vang, and thank you so much to the entire committee for this opportunity to present, to consider our request. So my name is Nalima Sitati Monene. I'm the executive director of ACER. ACER is the African Career Education and Resources, Inc. ACER is the leading community organization working to uplift and amplify the African diaspora to build power for systemic change to advance racial and economic equity in our communities. So at ACER, we build community wealth by providing access to funding and technical assistance to predominantly Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. And we focus on micro business owners. We support them. And because they're an economic backbone for our immigrant communities, especially in the Northwest suburbs. So the Black, Indigenous, and people of color entrepreneurs in Minnesota play a crucial role in the economy despite the glaring inequities that exist. And the cumulative effects of these inequities during the COVID-19 pandemic have required a coordinated effort to respond to and support community members in finding jobs and exploring new industries and starting and expanding small businesses and building wealth through ownership. To address the immediate and long-term economic challenges and opportunities of BIPOC communities, ACER completed a feasibility study and developed concepts for business incubators in Brooklyn Center. There is a huge and measurable lack of quality, updated, functional commercial retail inventory in the city today, particularly in the key corridors where BIPOC businesses could purchase or lease these properties. So the organization working with the city, we have identified potential sites existing within business corridors with high potential for redevelopment because they have strong current tenant mix and proximity to future light rail line and light rail stops and also the bus hub that is going to be extended in Brooklyn Center. These sites are, because of this potential redevelopment, are at a high risk of gentrification and displacement because of these pressures of redevelopment. So ACER is partnering with the City of Brooklyn Center to request $20 million in general obligation bonds to support the establishment of at least 3 BIPOC economic hubs. This investment will result in the direct support of over 200 businesses and 500 families by converting several commercial properties to small business hubs. The investment will provide a mechanism of anti-gentrification, which will trigger the opportunities for long-term community ownership of land and property. So the economic hubs will focus on providing a much-needed, conducive, and right-sized commercial space that is affordable and sustainable for the long haul. They will also provide continued technical assistance and training to ensure the long-term success of businesses. They will establish a pathway for future cooperative ownership by the community on those sites that are purchased. And also, they will create opportunities for generational wealth creation for the long haul. And I will yield the rest of my time to the Economic Development Director, Meg Bickman, who's Economic Development Director from the City of Brooklyn Center. That's okay.
Ms. Bickman, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Meg Beekman. I'm the Community Development Director for the city. And I just want to say good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your time this morning and hearing and considering this important request. As you consider the city's request for this bonding, I'd like you to keep in mind a few important facts. Brooklyn Center is the most diverse community in the region. 57% of our residents are people of color, and a quarter of them are foreign-born. We know that foreign-born residents are 3 times as likely to own their own business as native-born residents, and this statistic bears out in Brooklyn Center. We're home to nearly 1,000 small and micro businesses, a third of which are home-based. Brooklyn Center has the lowest median income in the region and the highest property tax rate in Hennepin County. And this is because the city's low tax base. Brooklyn Center residents pay 73% more for the exact same city services as other residents in wealthier suburban communities. And so when we come to you to talk about assisting with Brooklyn Center, we really want to underscore that this is an equity issue as much as it's an economic one. So despite these statistics, Brooklyn Center is rich with cultural diversity and a resilient and entrepreneurial people. And so creating wealth building opportunities to empower small businesses, particularly BIPOC owned small businesses, is a city council priority. Core to this goal is identifying ways to create ownership opportunities for small business owners. Owning their own bricks and mortar space creates stability in our business ecosystem and it builds wealth. So ownership puts business owners in control of their own destinies. It gives them a seat at the table when opportunities for reinvestment are presented. So the City of Brooklyn Center has been partnered with ACER over the last several years in different ways to better understand our business community and to develop strategies that build capacity and empower. Through that iterative work between ACER and the city and our local entrepreneurs, this concept for a business resource hub and a network of business incubators was formed. And so when development opportunities presented themselves, we began talking with developers about how these concepts could be built into projects as part of our community benefits. Today, we're working with a Lattice and Project for Pride and Living on a 15-acre project, which includes a business resource hub and incubator that will initially be owned by the city's Economic Development Authority with the goal of transitioning it to cooperative ownership over time. ACER has conducted an initial feasibility study for the project and has been a key stakeholder in assisting the city with designing the space and its programming. And they're now working on an implementation plan to carry the project through to construction and operations. The city's committed to seeing this project through and including through the contributions of land as well as tax increment financing to assist with the capital investment. And in addition to this project that's underway, the city's been working with ACER on a concept to acquire and convert specific retail commercial spaces into cooperative ownership for the BIPOC businesses that are operating in them. These projects all provide a regionally significant benefit, and the city can't and shouldn't be asked to carry the full cost. These bonding funds will ensure that these projects come to fruition. And what we all know is that an economically resilient Brooklyn Center benefits our region. So I will conclude by saying thank you for the opportunity to share our vision for this thriving and economically empowered Brooklyn Center.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Next up, Chair Moran, House File 4097.
Well, good morning, Chair Lee and members. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present today. So House File 4097 is Holly Q. Brown Community Center, which is a 93-year-old African-American nonprofit social service agency open to everyone. Holly Q. Brown comes out the Settlement House movement, which is also including dealing with segregation. Holly Q. Brown was and is a historic gathering place of the African-American community in St. Paul. They have six core program areas that you will hear from the CEO in regards to the great work that happens at Holly Q. Brown and why this request is to expand to accommodate the already increased needs within the building and the community. Thank you. And I do have several, at least, testifiers.
Mr. Palmer, please identify yourself and proceed. Is Mr. Palmer on? Ms. Nash?
I do not see Mr. Palmer on.
Not on. Oh, it seems like he was having some technical maybe problems.
So why don't, Chair Moran, since you have the other bills on, why don't we move to the other bills and we'll come back to this one then?
Okay, sounds good to me. Come
on. And so why don't we go to House File 4197, Walker West.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and members, House File 4197, it's really is about a Walker, the Walker family and Walker West, who are all both foundational to the to St. Paul Pride and the arts. Walker West provides music education to any toddler, child, youth, teen, or adult who want to learn. And yes, they offer a variety of lessons for all ages and skill levels. Walker West has music education. They do concerts and community events rooted in the African-American experience where people of all ages gather to explore and grow through music. They were awarded the Regional Cultural Treasures Award by the Fordham Knight Foundation. And I went to their website and they had one parent on there who stated that Walker West is a community of positive, caring people who not only teach music, but also transforms lives. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will hand it over to my testifier.
Mr. Halsey, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yeah, this is Braxton Halsey, Executive Director of Walker West Music Academy. Thank you, Chair Lee and Representative Moran. We are seeking general cash, and I have on with me one of our founders, Reverend Carl Walker, who will start the testimony and then I'll follow up. Reverend Walker.
Reverend Walker, please identify yourself and proceed.
Okay, I know he's on.
Reverend Walker, you may be muted right now if you're on.
Try to unmute Reverend Walker.
Why don't you go ahead, Mr. Halsey?
Okay, then I'll just go ahead. I think Representative Moran really gave a good summary of Walker West. I guess one of the things that she talked about is our Regional Cultural Treasures Arts, which is a very exclusive award for organizations of color that are really delivering for our community. I'm here to talk about the building project that we're in the midst of, and we've sent the letter of intent to the Wilder Foundation for their adult daycare facility property at 650 Marshall Avenue. Right now, we're in a facility of about 6,000 square feet. It's a non-renewable lease, which is over at the end of next year. The landlord is an investor in the other co-tenant, and the other co-tenant wants our space plus the neighbor's property. So, this is something that we need to handle right away. And we found out about this as we was doing our strategic plan. So this is actually part of our strategic plan as well. Another key issue is that during this pandemic, our enrollment increased 50%, and our strategic plan allowed us to expand the number of people we serve. Before, we were only serving school-age kids. Now we serve infants, and we also serve elders, and we have a dementia-friendly choir called the Amazing Grace Chorus, which is wonderful. So we have outgrown the space, and if anybody's ever driven by our facility, the buses and the cars fly by as the kids are trying to get out of the car. So it's kind of a dangerous situation. So that's, that gives the impetus for us to move. And then at the same time right now, because of the pandemic, we can no longer use our performance hall for recitals. And so we're now doing our recitals at Lutheran Church of the Redeemer, about 3 or 4 blocks from where we're at right now. One of the things that people don't realize is that Walker West is also a community gathering space. Prior to the pandemic, we had legal and financial literacy clinics. We served as a holiday food shelf, and we also ran a church service out of the facility. So with all of that going on, we have a letter of intent with the Wilder Foundation that we put out in January. They're going to make some decisions probably in April regarding our bid, and we're asking for $2.5 million, and we have a capital campaign committee that should be able to raise the rest of the funds for the facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Halsey. Seeing no other questions, next on the agenda, Representative Moran, House File 2855. Please proceed.
Okay, House File 2855 is Penumbra, which is a 45-year-old legacy Black art organization that was once home to playwright August Wilson. It is involved into the Penumbra Center for Racial Healing. Based in the Rondo neighborhood in St. Paul, Minnesota, Penumbra mission has long been to nurture Black artists, promote racial equity, and inspire creative resiliency. Building upon this history, the Penumbra Center for Racial Healing will offer new artistic offering robust equity training programs, and wellness services. Penumbra will serve as a statewide resource for individuals and organizational partners seeking profound inspiration, authentic connection, responsible civic participation, and engaged learning. There's more than I can talk and say, but we have the CEO here, the president of Penumbra, Sarah Bellamy, and I would like to pass it on to her.
So before we go to your testifier, Chair Moran, I understand that you have the DE1 amendment for reference. Can you briefly describe that?
So I'm going to let the, is it okay if the President Sarah Bellamy describe that? Because okay. I don't have it in front of me, unless someone else can do that for me, Chair.
Ms. Bellamy, why don't you proceed? Please identify yourself.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Lee and members. Thank you so much for welcoming me and my colleague, Amy Thomas, who's the COO of Penumbra, to talk with you this morning about Penumbra's next life cycle as a center for racial healing. I have to say, it's been incredibly inspiring to bear witness to the leadership here in our state from the folks who have presented already, people who are holding underrepresented communities close and providing essential programs and services to ensure that we all thrive. We're really honored to be amongst all of you today. So we'll be speaking about House File number 2855, which is a cash appropriations request in the amount of $2 million for pre-design support that would allow us to engage key partners in planning for a multi-use space providing vital racial healing for Minnesotans. Racial healing is a process that helps people release both resiliencies and traumas that are associated with experiencing racism. And Penumbra will activate the arts, equity training, and wellness programming to support individuals and communities in this vitally important work. Amy?
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, Chair Lee and members. Recently named an American Cultural Treasure by the Ford Foundation, Penumbra is a 45-year-old Black theater company in St. Paul, the largest and among the oldest in the nation. We've won critical acclaim and widespread respect for our dynamic depictions of Black life and culture. We currently train people all over the country in our equity practices, so from state and federal agencies to businesses and educational institutions, we leverage strategic partnerships to support racial equity. And today, we grow to deepen our impact in the state and across the country.
The Penumbra Center for Racial Healing will serve St. Paul, Greater Minnesota, and act as a national beacon. In the wake of what became a global movement for racial justice after George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis, Penumbra's transformation is timely and badly needed. We are eager to leverage our unique expertise and to amplify the work of our partners through a powerful network focused on the racial healing work that every American needs to do to heal. So this is a big vision to match a really big opportunity for Minnesota to lead our nation forward from this painful place. Penumbra will be a resource for individuals and organizational partners seeking knowledge and skills in the racial equity space, opportunities for rest and replenishment, sources for creative inspiration and nourishment, and avenues to engage in community building, civic action, and engagement.
On the heels of the pandemic, which has disproportionately affected Black and Brown communities and recent racial violence, the need for such support is urgent. We know that in the state of Minnesota, communities of color have the highest rates of mental health concerns, but remain largely underserved by providers. Research directly correlates the experience of racial stress to chronic illness, from heart conditions to diabetes to even certain cancers. The Penumbra Center for Racial Healing will provide a vital sanctuary and work in partnership to support initiatives in other sectors.
While racial unrest in Minneapolis was regularly featured in global news feeds, we who live here know that the issue extends far beyond the Twin Cities metro area, and that leaders and community members in St. Cloud and Duluth have struggled for decades to find effective solutions to the racial tensions that can regularly flare up. When we're in a heightened state of stress and anxiety, we react from a threat or trauma response that puts us into fight or flight mode. This decreases the safety of everyone involved. Penumbra is developing embodied somatic healing techniques that help people better regulate our nervous systems so that we can respond to misunderstandings, conflict, or harm from measured and balanced states.
We're building a network of partners to ensure that the resources that we currently have available and those that we're developing can reach Minnesotans across the state.
We're in the midst of a deeply iterative and community-informed planning process to realize our future. Critical investment from the state would allow us to engage multiple communities across Minnesota. Our work would include a discovery process to understand mission alignment with key partners within our four core areas of impact, and those are health equity, education, climate justice, and criminal justice reform. This process will help us determine whether our current site or a new site will best support racial healing in Minnesota. At the end of this process, we will have a roadmap to launch the Center for Racial Healing with a clear understanding of community needs, space requirements, essential partners, and key resources to realize racial healing for Minnesotans.
We want to thank you, Chair Lee, and the members here for taking time to hear from us, for making space to hear from all of the organizations speaking on behalf of underserved communities here in Minnesota, and for trusting that we know what we need to be well in the world, that resourcing the most vulnerable amongst us will better serve all of us. We're happy to answer any questions, and we're so grateful for Representative Moran's support on this effort. Thank you.
Ms. Thomas, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, Amy Thomas, COO with Penumbra.
And then Ms. Griffin, can you confirm that the DE amendment is just changing the funding source from the Arts and Cultural Fund to the General Fund?
Mr. Chair, it's Chelsea Griffin with House Research. Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. I think we have Mr. Palmer back on for House File 4097, the Hallie Q. Brown community. Mr. Palmer, if you're on, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, good morning, Chair Lee and Representative Moran and members of the committee. I am Jonathan Palmer from Hallie Q. Brown Community Center. I apologize for my lateness, I had a little technical difficulties. If I am able to, I was going to share a presentation with you all. Yes, I am. Give me one second. So I am the executive director of Hallie Q. Brown Community Center. We are a 93-year-old African-American social service agency open to everyone, located in the heart of the historic Rondo community. We began in 1929 as a settlement house for African-Americans and others who were denied services and access to resources. And out of that grew to be a multi-service center out within the Twin Cities metro area. We have grown over time. Our original building, which you can see in the lower right-hand corner, was originally an African-American union hall. It was a place where African-Americans who were being denied access to regular union halls, or to white union halls, not regular union halls, my apologies, were actually said, you know what, we're gonna just build our own. So they built the union hall in 1913, had a mortgage burning ceremony in 1923, and we moved in about 1930. We soon took over so much programming space, they sold the building to us. However, our building is one of the casualties of the highway, which came through, and the development in association with that. So the highway really disrupted the Rondo community, decimated that. And so we built the Martin Luther King Center in partnership with the city of St. Paul. Hallie Q. Brown paid for a third of the cost and partnered with the city of St. Paul for the other two thirds for one of the first HUD Neighborhood Service Center grants. And from that, we have grown to serve areas beyond the area of St. Paul. We have six core areas: early childhood education, youth enrichment, basic needs, seniors, historical archives, and multi-center hub programming, which is a fancy $15 word for we bring a bunch of programs together and make them accessible to the community. Our early learning center was actually originally an FDR New Deal program. You can see in the top picture on the far left, that is I. Myrtle Cardin, our first executive director. I am the sixth in our 93-year history. So there's a lot of longevity within our center. Within that, we are named for, and I can't get this to advance, technical difficulties are fun. There we go, look at that. Hallie Quinn Brown is who we're named for. So this was a woman who, at the turn of the 20th century, was traveling around Europe and America, talking about women's suffrage issues. She was a suffragette. civil rights issues. She campaigned for Calvin Coolidge. She's one of those hidden figures of history. She worked with Booker T. Washington, started the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, and most people don't know about her because there's no Lifetime original movie or action figure or anything like that. A lot of times we run into, and part of the reason for our being is that this misconception that Black history began with slavery. Sometime later, Martin Luther King was born, then Barack Obama became president. That's all that happened. Turns out there's a lot more. And Hallie Quinn Brown is an example of that. She was a very pivotal figure. You can see more about her on our website, but we are named for her. Looking at our program areas, the early childhood education starts at 6 weeks, goes up to 5 years. We take all forms of public assistance. We're licensed for 42 kids. We actually have a waiting list of 250 right now. Youth enrichment is before and after school care. However, during the pandemic, it became all day distance learning. So one of the key things that happened when the pandemic started was organizations like ours, which were essential service agencies, were asked to stay open, but there were not resources initially for that. And so a number of us had organizations had to band together. We had to work overtime, do things beyond the normal in order to go ahead and make sure people got served. Most food shelves had to either close or go to a pre-packed box. Hallie Q. Brown innovated, created an online order form and set up delivery and pickup for people so that we could maintain the client choice model. Because of this, we saw our service area and the needs grow from that. We had a 4,000% increase in new clients in 2020. In March 2020, 108 new participants signed up for our food shelf. In June, 1,808 new clients signed up. And we have been serving people from all over the state of Minnesota. Previously, we were primarily St. Paul. We have ones that come in from St. Louis Park, from Lakeville, from even Rochester and other parts. Part of that was because during the pandemic, they could not get what they needed. A pre-packed box, if you've got gluten allergies, if you've got religious preferences, if you have any special needs, that does not meet your needs. So when we're looking at why we're doing this, we're looking to expand what we do and the service we have. We still have lots of people coming from all over the state to get services from us. We're also largely utilizing volunteers. That's one of the key pieces we do. In between the 2020 and 2021, we distributed over 1.5 million pounds, 1.5 million pounds of food out to the community and around the state of Minnesota. We also maintain the early childhood education for children of essential workers, distance learning for kids that parents couldn't afford to stay home with them. What we're looking at with this request is to expand beyond what we already have. Right now, we have a 250 student waiting list. We don't have enough classroom space for them. We also have a food shelf that is bursting at the seams because there's so much need. During the pandemic—
Mr. Palmer, can I have you wrap up, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. Basically, the idea is we're gonna expand, add more classroom space, expand the historical archives for the Rondo community, and work to do more service.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer, and thank you, Chair Moran. Next up on the agenda is House File 3973, Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will do you a favor and make this very short. I have two great testifiers here today who will share more about the PROCEED project, which will benefit folks in my district and address a lot of the disparities. So without further ado, I have Dwayne and Douglas who will be sharing more.
Mr. Dutrill, I apologize if you got the last name wrong. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Zong, Mr. Chair, and the committee members. My name is Dwayne Dutrill. I'm a member of PROCEED's Board of Executive Board. And PROCEED's is an educational-based organization that holds annual college tours and fairs for students and for their parents. The college fair is carried out in conjunction with St. Paul Public Schools and College Stores have been successful in taking students around the country to historical Black colleges and universities for the past 15 years. Literally, we have taken over 1,000 students from the Twin Cities who have been identified and have benefited from this programming, and they have been exposed to post-secondary options and given the tools to be successful. Proceed Inc. also has additional education programs to guide urban youth in their efforts to make good choices in their future. The Progressive Center for Early Education Center was built on the premises that early interventions is the key to addressing the educational disparities between students of color and their white counterparts. Proceed also established a long-term relationship with Skylearn, which is an educational software company that uses Minnesota standards for diagnostic software assessments and to provide a true grade level of students in math and reading and be able to provide clipboards of lessons to bring students up to the grade level. So this youth center is going to hold all of that. And furthermore, and then I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. Hill, Proceeds has educational programs that guide youth in their efforts to make good choices in the future. And we have the Progressive Center for Early Education that was built on the premises that early intervention is key to addressing educational disparities between students of color and their white counterparts. So I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Dwayne, and good morning, committee members. My name is Doug Hill, and I'm also representing Proceed Inc. And I wanna talk about, announced that Proceed will be partnering with mHealth in providing a 3,000 square foot full service health clinic in this new structure. We are asking for $6.7 million to design, construct, and furnish and equip a new community center that will consist of a gymnasium, several classrooms and office spaces, a warehouse to support our food shelf that we provide out of the out of Proceed, as well as a health care center that will speak to the disparities and that were presented in the 2018 health care disparity in Ramsey County. And so we are excited about the partnership with mHealth, and our goal is to provide quality service, equitable services to the East Side community of St. Paul that was identified as a healthcare desert in 2018 and continue on to today. And our belief is that by combining healthcare, educational opportunities and services and the food shelf will speak to the determinants of health crises that we have in St. Paul. Answer any questions at this time.
Yep, and if I can just add one other thing, Mr. Chair, that also in the complex we will have a food shelf. We've been having a food shelf at Proceed for the last 14 years. We have given over $1 million worth of food. The food shelf serves the at-large community and has been in partnership with St. Paschal Church. In January of 2022, the food shelf gave out over 11,000 pounds of food. And it's a part of the Second Harvest Heartland CFSP Senior Program that serves over 500 senior citizens in February. So we thank you for your support and for this time.
Thank you, Representative Zhang, for your bill. No questions, so we'll move on to the next bill on the agenda, Representative Abaje, House File 4040.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Hold on one second, sorry. So House File 4040 supports the Northside Economic Opportunity Network's request for $6 million to construct a food business incubation facility. NEON works with entrepreneurs across North Minneapolis as they work to build wealth and create jobs in the community. One of the fastest growing industries is the food prep and catering business. And by having a food business incubator on the north side, low and moderate income entrepreneurs will have the access to a commercial kitchen in addition to the program support provided by NEON to help their business thrive. To discuss the specifics of the project and of the need, I have with me this morning NEON CEO.
Mr. McClain, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ogbaji. Thank you for both authoring this bill. My name is Warren McClain. I'm President and CEO of the Northside Economic Opportunity Network. NEON is in the process of planning and constructing a commercial food business incubator in North Minneapolis. The total cost of the project is $12.5 million. And we're asking for the state to partner with NEON by providing $6 million from the general fund. I do have a short presentation. So very quickly, NEON was started in 2006. Our mission is to build wealth for low to moderate income entrepreneurs in North Minneapolis. In the last 2 years, NEON has provided 11,560 hours in technical assistance, $6.8 million in loans and grants, and we served 2,256 clients in the last 2 years. Our Grow and Thrive campaign, which was started in 2020, has now raised about $4.8 million. This is the specs for our kitchen, and we have a video, and I would like for Ian to show that video.
Sure, thank you, Warren. Just to introduce myself quickly, I'm Ian Simonson. Good morning, everyone. I'm a principal with LSE Architects. I'm extremely honored to be here with all of you this morning and to be here with Warren to present the NEON project. Extremely exciting project. The NEON Food Business Incubator proposed to be an extremely transformative project in North Minneapolis. And I do have a quick video to share with everyone.
Did you know that North Minneapolis is the fifth largest food desert in the United States? It's also home to NEON entrepreneurs, 40% of which operate in a food-related industry, but with no available commercial kitchen. The Northside Food Business Incubator, a main component of the Grow and Thrive campaign, will include 24 private kitchens, a community share kitchen, a food science research laboratory, a packaging and marketing facility, and will host 270 food business clients each year. The incubator will provide a reliable and affordable facility for NEON entrepreneurs to start and grow their businesses. We anticipate it will be a self-sustaining asset, providing workforce development, business incubation, and food services to the Northside community. Please join us in making this vision a reality.
So I won't add to that, but you heard from that from the video what the center will do. I will also tell you that during the construction phase, it'll provide 261 jobs, and through once it's completed, the project will provide 265 permanent jobs to North Minneapolis. It'll also serve 270 businesses. There was a study conducted by the U of M. There'll be a direct investment of $12.5 million. It will generate economic opportunity, or I should say activity, of $19.1 million during the construction phase. It'll also generate $26.2 million when it's in full operation. What you see here is a list of our partners, which include on our campaign committee, we have the likes of Doug Baker, David Mortensen, Van Sopperman. And you can see a list of a number of our investors. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McClain. Seeing no questions, thank you, Representative Ogbaji. Next up on the agenda is Representative Ogbaji, House File 3797. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So I also have an amendment to this, so I want to speak to that first. The amendment does two things. First, it requires the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority to ensure minimum standards are maintained at its largest housing project, which is Heritage Park, which I'll talk about soon, before any additional state funds are allocated to MPHA to build new housing projects.
And then it also adds and operation at line 9 to allow operational expenses to be included. So thank you for the opportunity to present this important bill today, House File 3797, which provides state cash funding to rehabilitate and maintain the public housing portion of Heritage Park, which is a mixed income housing project in my district and the largest of its kind in the state. In 1995, Minnesota Federal District Court Judge Rosenbaum signed a consent decree that outlined an agreement with the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority to raise essentially 800 units of substandard housing in the Sumner Glenwood neighborhood of Minneapolis and replace it with mixed income housing, which is now known and now called Heritage Park. From this, a strong community was built that showcased how people from mixed incomes could live together. Unfortunately, over time, the public housing portion of Heritage Park is declining into disrepair again. And so these are 200 public housing units that without intervention would leave people without a dignified place to live. The bill is intended to address all the needs of the public housing units to ensure that we don't return to the conditions resulting in the federal consent decree almost 30 years ago. So I have two testifiers with me who can talk more about the need for this project.
Ms. Brody, please identify yourself and proceed.
Certainly, my name is Claudia Brody, and I'm joined by Thomas Redd, a resident of Heritage Park. There's also a one-page document in the materials. I'm senior vice president and a 40-year employee of McCormick Barron Salazar, a mixed-income developer with major public-private housing projects in 48 cities and 25 states. We have successfully partnered with 15 cities on major HUD housing and community reinvestments through a program called the Choice Neighborhood Initiative, which has yet to be tapped anywhere in Minnesota. 20 years ago, we entered into a public-private partnership with the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority, HUD, and the state to rebuild Heritage Park as a 440-unit mixed-income community. Our partner, MPHA, is responsible for the operating cost of 200 units of public housing on the site. Money from HUD did not keep pace with operating costs and capital needs, so reserves set aside for this purpose were quickly exhausted. The 220 non-public housing units do not produce enough rent to cover their own expenses and the cost of operating the public housing expenses. As a private partner, we have resorted to covering some of the public housing deficits, now exceeding $7 million. The private funding has only been enough to keep the property at minimal operations, and the units have significant deferred maintenance that must be addressed. Despite our efforts to encourage appropriate funding to maintain these existing units, we have not been successful. Rather, in November, MPHA announced its plan to create 84 new public housing units at a cost of $34 million, with $4.6 million appropriated by the City of Minneapolis from its ARP funds for this new housing. Our residents, substantially large families and BIPOC, have endured the slow but continual decline of their housing and safety as they continue to put their heart and soul into this community. We encourage support of this bill now to provide necessary funding to preserve this marvelous community and keep it viable during full-scale renovation. The renovations needed will cost more even as time marches on. Chair Lee, I am pleased to introduce Thomas Redd.
Mr. Redd, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Thomas Redd. I was a resident of Sumner Glenwood Housing that was torn down and replaced by Heritage Park, where I live now. I work at Sumner Library and I'm about to embark on a master's in public history at the U of M. There's a pattern of neglect in housing redevelopment that is divided by and adjoins major transportation routes. My home, Heritage Park, is bordered by Interstate 94 and is divided by Olson Memorial Highway. We are experiencing the neglect caused by underfunding for the public housing at Heritage Park. These residents are currently plagued with residing in a food desert, little to no retail options for members to reinvest in their community, and air pollution rates among the highest in the state. I want to thank Representative Igbaje for championing the amendment she has included in the bill. It will create a strong incentive for MPHA to take care of the housing stock it has. This accountability will ensure my neighborhood will be revitalized rather than overlooked. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Redd, and thank you, Representative Abaje, for your bill. Last on the agenda, Chair Gomez, House File 3927, please proceed.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, you caught me off guard a second there. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for having us. Pleased to present House File 3927 today, which is $27.8 million for the Pills to expand the Pillsbury House Theater site. So this is on 35th and Chicago. It's three blocks from George Floyd Square. And, you know, I think that the main thing that it has a little black box theater in it. And so when I kind of first became aware of this organization, you know, I lived a few blocks from this facility for many years. Unfortunately, I don't anymore. But, you know, that was sort of the main way I thought of it was it was a theater. But, you know, as I kind of spent more time living in the neighborhood, I just learned more and more that, you know, they really do a lot of work around creative community development. There is a project called Arts on Chicago that brings art out into the community. So, you know, outside my house, there would be like these sort of street festivals that everybody would be invited to in the neighborhood. It really created like a lot of cross-pollination that was, you know, it was really critical to building community in this way. That's, you know, kind of that idea about art bringing people together is something that we hear folks talk about, but I just really saw it play out in person over and over again through this organization. They take care of elders, they take care of babies, they have a full spectrum of programming, and this investment will really enable them to bring, you know, their work on creative community development to the next level. Just finally, the other thing was one of the first ways that I interacted with them professionally, and again, I thought of them as this really this arts organization. But one of the first ways that I interacted with them professionally was when I was in my role at the city of Minneapolis, and they were critical to a conversation that we were having around land trusts for commercial properties. So really this idea of like, how is it that, how do we take a neighborhood that is, you know, transitioning in some ways and in danger of gentrification and displacement, and try to root wealth and control over the soil into those communities. So I'm just really excited about, you know, the next stage of Pillsbury House House's life in our community, and would love to pass it over to my testifier.
Mr. Mosley, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you all today. Dara Mosley, President and CEO of Pillsbury United Communities. Representative Gomez, thank you for your leadership, and Representative Chairlee, for the opportunity to present. Representative Gomez did an excellent job of describing the impact, and that's what we ultimately want to manifest and continue to amplify in South Minneapolis and beyond. And so here is our vision for unlocking community creativity to build a better future. And this is to create a the expansion and creation of a creative campus for community to develop skills that foster that personal, social, and economic power. And so this creative and economic hub in South Minneapolis is what we aim to continue to build upon. Our theory of change is thinking about how we can weave art and creativity in the fabric of community that ultimately gets to access attachment and agency for all. And all of the wonderful things that Representative Gomez described is doing that, access, attachment, and agency, people feeling empowered and ownership over their community to create the type of change we all envision. Why now this is important is because we've lost a number of, and as you all know, some really cultural institutions in our community, nonprofit organizations. And so we've seen it as our as a way for us to exert some leadership in this space of creating home for those nonprofit organizations that no longer have a home, but also being able to bring individuals and community together for culturally relevant and responsive programming and anchor institutions. We've been doing this work for more than 30 years with the theater, but more largely and more broadly, over 140 years as an organization, as a settlement house. You've heard a little bit about settlement houses throughout some of the other presentations. And so in both providing direct and indirect arts integrated solutions within our community. We also know that it is an opportunity for us to support a robust artist ecology. There are, in our immediate community, builds on creative social network And these are accrued benefits for everyone. And so you heard some of the plans, but let me just briefly talk to them. Stage one would be the Studio and Technical Arts Campus. So this would be tech trades and apprenticeship programs around textile design and media production, also a small urban farm, lighting and design. So all of the things that you see wonderful artistic expressions, but there's a lot that happens behind the scenes in terms of bringing them that actually creates wonderful pathways and job opportunities for young people in our community. And then stage two would be the renovation of the Pillsbury House and Theater site. Specifically expanding it, as I mentioned, to house and host more creative community organizations, expand our bike shop that's operated by homeless youth, which is next door, and then other amenities, commercial kitchen and gathering spaces and green spaces inside of the building. And lastly, just thinking about the economic impact that in stage one, we talk annually about the young people that will be coming through, that will be getting high paying union jobs, gaining the technical skills that are necessary, but also again, supporting the more broader artist ecology. And then that stage two is really about amplifying that. So more an additional community members served, over 15,000 additional staff, and then supporting the artist, over 200 are going to be supported economically through this. So in closing, a dollar in your investment in nonprofits and arts and culture is matched over $5. And so this is really a catalytic investment that will fuel a broader ecosystem and really strengthen our community arts organizations and Pillsbury House and Theater. Thank you for the opportunity, and if there's questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mosley, and thank you, Chair Gomez, for your presentation. Members, that conclude our agenda for today. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 24th. We will hear about climate change and how that impacts our state's credit rating, and also receive an update on integrating resiliency into our state capital projects. This meeting is adjourned.